Okay, previously we discussed the issue of different animals and living beings that are considered to be kosher and not kosher. Now we're moving on to discuss the issue of items, parts of animals, even kosher animals, that are considered to be kosher and not kosher. We talked a little bit about chelev. Okay, so let's pick up from there. So the Torah says very clearly that there is a prohibition to eat chelev. What is chelev? So it's not all fat, of course. Meat has fat. And there are certain types of fats which are permitted. And the permitted fats are called shuman in halacha. Shuman. Whereas the forbidden fats are called chelev. Not to be confused with cholov. It's another context. Okay, chelev are the forbidden fats. The only difference between chelev and shuman is the location in the animal's body.
You can eat shuman.
You can eat shuman. Any piece of meat that you eat is generally going to have some fat on it.
A lot of fat even.
Okay, chelev is the fat that's around, that surrounds certain internal organs. Okay, now the iser of chelev applies specifically in a behema, as opposed to chaya ve'of. Okay, so there's no such thing as forbidden fats in a chicken. That's of. Okay, when it comes to mammals, so we pointed out last time that mammals are divided into two categories, behema and chaya. Behema basically means domesticated animals, cows, sheep, goats. And chaya is undomesticated animals, basically in terms of the kosher meat market. Deer is pretty much the only thing you're going to find, as far as I'm aware, you know, widely available. What's that?
Never seen deer.
Even deer is not that common, but deer is, you know, you can get deer. So there's no iser of chelev in deer, specifically for a behema. Some point out that behema, of course, behemos are the animals that are brought as karbanos. And in a animal that is brought as a karban, the chelev is burned on the mizbeach, no matter what kind of karban it is. So maybe that's part of the issue. To recall, you know, originally we registered in this week's parsha. Originally in the Midbar, you weren't allowed to shecht an animal to eat, stam, without bringing a karban.
Yeah.
You had to bring it as a karban. When we got to Eretz Yisrael, so then that was no longer feasible. Everyone was going to live very spread out. We weren't in one concentrated camp like we were in the Midbar. So then you were allowed to slaughter animals just for eating without bringing them as karbanos. But again, this is in the realm of Tamei HaMitzvos. But perhaps just to remind us that taking an animal life is a significant thing, and that when we go ahead and shecht an animal, we have to recall, you know, we have to recall the fact that one can do so, and one can be involved in this world in a way, in a manner which leads to kedusha, right? Such as by bringing karbanos, one can make one's Judaism introduced the concept, we're first discussed in various places. Judaism introduced the concept that you can eat kedusha, that you can have an animal which is a karban, which you get to eat from. Other people may, you know, they had karbanos also, other religions had karbanos, it just totally burned on the mizbech. We introduced the concept, HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduced the concept, that you could have a karban which part of it is burned on the mizbech, and you also get to eat from it. And, you know, the chiddush there is that there's something called involvement in gashmius, which can be kadosh. So in any event, one's like, that's the carbon shlamim. And the carbon shlamim, of course, the fats are burned on the mizbeach, and the meat you got to eat. So maybe that has something to do with the isser of chaylev bizman hazeh. Be that as it may, there is an isser of chaylev, which is important to know about. Yeah.
It makes sense that you can internalize kedusha, just like if you eat non-kosher, so you can internalize
Okay, fair. Very fair. This isser of chaylev, we don't see it that much bizmanenu, because we get the meat when it's already... No, the chelev has already been removed, but a person should be aware that this is the reason why many cuts of steak, especially certain ones which are in high demand and considered very fancy in the non-kosher market, are not at all widely available in the kosher market. For example, sirloin steaks and some other cuts of steak the hindquarters basically are not widely available. One issue is the Gidan Nasha. Okay, but the Gidan Nasha can be removed. It's not the end of the world to remove the Gidan Nasha. The one second, the Chelev is a more significant issue. It can also be removed. Okay, one second, there's a lot of Chelev in the hindquarters. Okay, it can be removed through a process called Nikur. But it's a very painstaking process, slow process, complicated process. And you end up like, you know, ruining someone who cuts a steak because you have to cut the meat up in order to get out all the chaylev. Okay, the chaylev is a very serious issue. Isser karis.
What animal?
It's an isser karis. What's that? No, this is not deer.
This is cow, sheep.
Not deer. No, so you can get these cuts from deer. Deer, you can get these cuts more easily because you don't have to take out any chaylev. You just have to take out the gedan nashe. But from beef, let's say, behemoths, so to take out the chaylev, it can be done, but it's more complicated. In the modern world, the kosher meat market has been significantly affected by simple economics.
There was like a whole scandal in Los Angeles recently, I don't know if you've heard, they were selling like non-kosher meat for like the past like 3 years. They basically like just found out that the biggest meat distributor in all of Los Angeles, like the most like well-known and well-respected certificate of kosher was like a phone. It was just like they were selling non-kosher meat pretty much.
Are you kidding me? Well, I didn't hear about that actually. Yeah.
And some like rich from Jew bought it out so that like they could like keep it quiet for a little bit. It's like a big scandal.
Oh, gosh. You have these things every now and then. Okay. Okay, what's that?
My family never brought from there. So we import from Chicago.
Import from Chicago. Wow. Okay, in any event, why do I say that it's impacted by economics as follows? Okay, used to be in the olden days that each town had the town shochet. And you had your animals, basically. And you'd bring your animal to your local shochet. And he'd shecht it for you, and you take it home. So then you had what you had, okay? And we'll discuss this when we talk about glot and non-glot, okay? And you might very well decide you wanted to do nikur. Bismanenu, it's done in industrial-sized plants. So basically, there's an economic incentive to do things as quickly as possible. And that means you want to, on the one hand, as if you're a reliable kosher organization, you don't want to cut kosher corners. On the other hand, in order to be as economically profitable as possible, the companies want to do things as quickly as possible. So what it boils down to is they usually just don't take the time to do nikur. They just take the hindquarters, throw it on the non-kosher line. And then that saves them a lot of time, saves money. And if you want to do nikur, it's a much, much slower process. That means they need more supervisors, more people working. So it's going to be very, very expensive. So in any event, that's why some of these cuts are not widely available. Yeah?
Did we mention agroprocessors?
I don't plan on mentioning it. It has nothing to do with Hilchos Kashrus.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know what happened?
Right? No, I'm aware.
What's alleged to have happened?
This is just associative, like, things having to do with, you know, scandals having to do with from Jews. I have no interest in discussing it at all. Okay, weiter.
I think there were problems.
Be quiet. Okay, in any event, that's chaylev, yeah.
We did the shchiti here, he showed us like with chaylevs and all the things.
Good, very good. So you already had a live demonstration. See what it is. Even a kosher animal that's shechted properly, there's parts that you could eat and you'd be chayv karis. Okay, that's chaylev.
I'm already
chayv karis. You can, alright, I don't know what that means. Maybe we'll talk to us about this a different time. But you can do tshuva. You can do tshuva. But you haven't gone to med school yet. You haven't gone to med school. But anyway, going to med school doesn't make you chayv karis.
You're sitting in your room crying over all those rejection letters. You're
going to understand. Okay. Whoa. Oof. Oof. Alrighty. Anyway. Okay, we're very nice to each other here. Okay, in any event.
Good thing Wayne doesn't own the med school.
Okay. Good. That is one item that exists in kosher animals, which is non-kosher. There's another one, which we'll talk about, which also was mentioned in this past week's parsha, which is blood. Dam.
Blood.
Kisui Adam is one issue. Okay? That's not what I was going to address right now, but yes, kisu adam. I think we mentioned it briefly. When you shecht a chaya or an oaf, but not a behema. When you shecht a chaya or an oaf, there is a requirement to take dirt and put it on top of the blood that spurts out at the time of the shechita. That is a mitzvah called kisu adam. It doesn't really affect the kashrus of the meat. It is an independent mitzvah that applies at the time of the shechita. What's that?
Do you have to do it like if you're in a big plant, let's say like you cut, you're shechting a ton, like thousands of chickens a day.
I think that mitzvah is still applying.
I know, but I'm saying, can you do it like a collective kisu adam at the end of the day, or you have to do it individually for shechita?
I don't think it needs to be done individually. I don't know what the mitzvah is, how they do it in different slaughterhouses.
I don't remember. No, because they dumped it all in the drain.
Okay, what did they shecht you when they did your shechita?
Lamb.
So a lamb is a behema. There is no kisu adam for a behema.
Okay. Wait, what was the kisui
adam
for?
Kisui adam, once again, is for chaya or oaf. So most commonly, let's say chicken, turkey, when you shecht a chicken, a turkey, you need to cover the blood that spurts out at the time of the shechita with dirt. Why? This is what the Torah says. We can suggest hypothetical tamei amitzus, but speculative time and misses. But at the end of the day, this is what the Torah requires. Okay, good. Let's talk about dam in terms of kashrus, though. Excuse me.
Okay.
Any other?
Portuguese, Spanish, anyway?
I said French.
German?
At this
point,
French.
Okay, excuse me.
What did you say?
Yeah, a while ago.
Oh.
Wait. Yeah. Whew. Allergy season. Okay. So the Torah repeats the Isser of Dam several times. Just to mention, just as an aside, the Torah uses with regard to the Isser of Dam an expression which it doesn't really use about other Isurim. The Torah says, Rak Chazak Levilti Achol Adam. Be strong not to eat blood. Why does the Torah use this specifically about the Isser of Dam? So Rashi quotes the Medrash, which has a machlokas. One opinion says, apparently, at the time of Matan Torah, blood was like the in thing. Everyone was eating blood. They had a big Yetzirah for blood. So that's why they had to. That's why the Torah had to say Rak Chazak. The other opinion says, give me a break. Just like we are a little bit revolted by the thought of eating blood. So too, blood was never something which was a big taiva for people. So one second, please.
We
want to
eat blood, China.
So this opinion of the Medrash says as follows: the Torah is teaching us a beautiful lesson. If the Torah goes out of its way to say chazak, be strong, strengthen yourself, not to do an aveira, which people don't have much of a taiva for anyway. Kal vachomer. For the averus that people do have a taiva for, that a person has to constantly be mechazik himself, strengthen himself, and confirm and extra reinforce his resolve with regard to all of those averus to make sure to avoid at all costs any avera. The Bala Musar described Mesilas Yesharim, the very beginning, talks about a person should run away from anything that will take him away from Avodas Hashem. And a person should run towards anything that will further his Avodas Hashem. That's a modus operandi for life. Some people seem to operate with the sense of, no, you got to test how good you are. Put yourself bedavka in a place which is dangerous. That's not smart at all. Chazak, you have to be chazak to strengthen yourself. So part of strengthening yourself to make sure you don't violate Surim is to not... Why would you put yourself in a place of danger? Say if it's necessary, maybe once in a while it's necessary. Maybe at different times in life, different measures are necessary as a person develops his develops his lifestyle and matures. Maybe his name is a different than later in life. Okay, we can discuss the details. But I thought I'd mention this Rashi, the Medrash, Rak Chazak. He says to always be mechazik himself, to do what's right, to avoid what's wrong. Okay, good. Okay, let's talk about the Yisur of Dam. The Torah in Parshas Re'eh indicates that the Isra of Dam, again, which only applies to... the Isra of Dam, maybe because Dam was sprinkled on the Mizbeach for Karbonos. The Isra of Dam applies to Behema Chayev Ov. It does not apply to fish. Okay, there's no Isra of Dam when it comes to fish. Fish in general don't have a lot of the halachas. There's no shechita for fish. You can kill it however... there's no Isra of Dam.
Why is that?
You can kill anything you want. Have you ever tried shechting a fish before?
You'll find out. That's what the Rebbe Shalom said.
Have you ever tried shechting a fish before?
Yep. What does that mean? How did you
just
cut
it. You don't have to shech it.
How do you shech the fish?
Yeah, that's what I want to know too.
You eat a fish while it's still alive.
You cut it. You cut it whatever way you want.
And you bite it and put it when it's still alive.
That's
disgusting.
That's really gross.
Back in the day, I feel like I remember they were fish.
Is there ever been a time I've just turned into a dog?
Okay. I don't think you're allowed to eat from a fish while it's still alive. You have to kill it.
It's
an isser.
It's
an isser. I don't know. Okay, Blineder, we can look into it. Blineder, we can look into it. Raw is different than alive.
Like,
raw and alive are not the same.
Like, you pull them out of the water, you just bite them.
Yeah, I'm
talking about raw.
I'm not
talking
about
raw.
I'm
talking about
raw.
Of course, you can answer this.
Yeah. Rabbi Zai, we need to do this one at a time. Whoever wants to talk, raise your hand, and we'll call on you. Right now, Evan is talking. Yes.
The problem is, like, conch shells, we couldn't find any of them. Basically, the tour guys, they went and they found...
Where was this?
In Turks and Caicos.
Where?
In the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And they cleaned them off, and they took the fish out, and they just ate it raw. Like, right, they pulled it out of, like, the shell, and they just ate it raw.
Were the Jews?
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that that beautiful story.
Yeah. And they threw the rest of the board, and sharks came. I was swinging at it, like, it's awesome.
Okay. Okay, in any event. So how do we make sure that we're not eating blood? There's blood. I want to point out, if we want to get a little more technical, we could point out that there are different types of blood. Okay, there's dam ha-nefesh. Dam ha-nefesh is the blood that spurts out when you do the shechita. That is that's the most severe level in terms of the iser of eating dam. Then there's dam ha-ivarim shapirish. That means blood that's absorbed that's inside the meat, but it leaves its initial location, which would happen if you would cook it. So part of it would seep out into the meat. So that is also aser. Dam evarim shelo pirish is actually mutter if it stays in its initial place. 1 second. So to eat raw meat actually is actually not aser, because whatever blood is in the meat is still in its original location. It's called dam evarim shelo pirish, blood of the limbs that has not moved. Once you cook it, so the cooking process draws out the blood from the blood vessels into the meat, that's called dam evarim shepirish. And now at this point you have an iser of dam. So how do we make sure this doesn't happen? Most of us prefer our meat cooked as opposed to raw.
And disease infested.
Okay, good. So there are two ways. There are two options. There are two options. One, which is the more common way that it's done, is a process called melicha, salting. Some people just call it kashering. Okay, so the process basically is as follows, that when you apply salt, which we'll discuss in a moment, when you apply salt to the meat, the salt draws out the blood, and then if you do the right way, which is a process we'll describe a little bit in one moment, so then there's no blood left in the meat. Okay, you might still see some red in the meat, it doesn't make a difference. Al pi halacha, whatever blood is included in the Isser of Dam is drawn out by the salt. Okay? When I was in Grosser, Miller quoted from Shmuel Soloveitchik, the less famous of the Soloveitchik brothers, brother of Rav Yosef Dov and Rav Aaron. So Rav Shmuel Soloveitchik, in addition to being a great Talmud Chacham, was also a chemistry professor. So he claimed, so he explained as follows, that the salt basically dehydrates the meat, the blood. Blood is actually 90% liquid and 10% red blood cells. So even if there is red still left in the meat, which is from the blood, it's red blood cells, doesn't matter. In its dehydrated form, that's not what the Torah asserts. In any event, if you do the process right, then you can be assured that you are avoiding the issur of dam. So the process basically works the following way. The meat is rinsed, soaked, okay? Then it's salted. It's not regular table salt. It's a coarse, much coarser type of salt.
I do it with Rav Moh.
Okay. You did it with Rav Moh?
I do
it
with
Rav. Okay, very nice. What's that?
The Rav.
Okay, you let it sit in the salt for an hour.
I pictured
it. Isn't it just right?
And then it needs to be washed off. Okay, it needs to be washed. It's generally washed 3 times. Okay, and this is the process of melicha. And at that point, it is kosher. You can use the meat. The meat needs to be salted within 3 days of shechita. Okay, after that point, the meat naturally gets dehydrated, and then it's harder to draw out the blood.
Okay? If you take the piece of meat that you want to eat and you don't salt it, skewer it and
roast
it.
Okay, good. Very fun. What's that? Well, good. Very good. Very good. Okay, Evan, what do you got going on over there?
No, this is when we salted it.
Okay, yeah, pictures?
Yeah, I picture before and after.
Can you pass it around?
Very nice. Okay, if you'll help us understand what's going on, then by all means, pass it around. Used to be in the olden days. In the olden days, everybody did melicha at home. Okay, you'd go to the butcher, you'd basically get a slab of meat, which had just been shechted. They'd bring it home, and then the housewife would go ahead and do the salting. Bizmaneinu, pretty much nobody knows how to do it anymore because it's all done, you know, manufactured on industrial scale. By the time you get it, it's already been done. Okay, don't do this at home by yourself without making sure that you know what you're doing. Just on the basis of this shear, that's not enough. Okay. Okay.
I feel like I'm a pro now.
To say,
you should join that.
This is for educational purposes. Okay. Okay. I want to mention the following issue. What's that?
In the relation of the Ashkenaz, like the RCC is the Ashkenaz kosher symbol. So all the Spartans are like, oh, you have to get Kehila.
Are we talking about the Los Angeles meat scandal?
Yeah.
You should join in now that you're
okay.
A pro.
My dad was going to go to LA and help them out.
Okay.
So they needed a trusted.
Very good. Okay, let's bring it back over here, please. There is an issue which was significantly more prominent, significantly more of a practical issue than it is Bizmanenu, which was known as Basar Kafu, Kuf Fe Vav Aleph. Kafu just means frozen. So frozen meat, you can like take kosher meat and freeze it. No, that's no problem. There is a phenomenon which it's not so widespread Bizmanenu as far as I understand, if I understand correctly, but a number of years ago it was much, much more widespread, which is as follows. That they, you know, the big meat processing places, the big kosher slaughterhouses, the big slaughterhouses in general, are in South America.
Really?
Yeah. South America.
Argentina,
Venezuela, I don't know. That's where it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so they have, of course, mashkichim and shochtim and bodkim that go to these places. But, you know, it's not pasha to get good people down and who wants to go live in Argentina. So, what's that?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like an amazing.
Also,
the government is like good friends with Iran, but
they're good friends with Iran.
These days, you know, it's true.
Yeah.
Okay. In any event, what they would sometimes do in order to save manpower and cut down on costs is that they wouldn't do the melicha, they wouldn't do the salting. Now, it has to be done within 3 days. So what they would do is they would freeze it. They would freeze the meat. So the question is, does freezing the meat stop the clock on your 3 days? So this was a discussion. Many hold that it does. that it does stop the clock, and then you can salt it again when you thaw the meat, and some hold that it does not stop the clock. Okay, I mention it just so you are a little better educated. Yeah.
Is this in terms of halacha, or is this in terms of science?
It's a question of halacha.
It's like 3 days.
But in this case, the halacha and the science are you know, undoubted.
Intertwined,
yeah, for sure. Okay. Okay. Now, there is another option besides for salting, besides for melicha, which is tzliya, roasting. Okay, and there is one part of the animal which you must do tzliya. Melicha is not acceptable, which is the liver. Very good. The liver. So liver has a lot of blood. There's a lot of blood. Okay, so it filters your blood.
That's the one thing you're allowed to eat that has like blood.
Well, you have to do the process of tzliya to get out the blood. Okay. So, yeah. So, melicha is not sufficient when it comes to liver. What you need to do is tzliya. So, the way the process works is as follows. There's a lot talking today. It's too much. Okay, the way the process works is as follows. If it's a animal liver as opposed to a chicken liver, then you have to first, it's not even enough to tzliya by itself, you have to first cut deep grooves in the liver, or just cut it into slices, okay, to allow the blood to flow out more freely. If it's a chicken liver, that might not be necessary. And then it needs to be roasted or broiled over right over a fire. Okay, one can do this in the broiler in one's oven. However, a person needs to take care because the blood and juices that drip out, first of all, it has to be done in a way which it's able to drip out. And second of all, those things are not kosher. So whatever, you know, you should put a pan underneath or whatever it is, but whatever rack it's on or pan that it drips into is going to be not kosher. You cannot then go ahead and use that same pan or that same rack to cook, you know, to cook meat afterwards.
And then it doesn't get the oven. How would you
kosher the rack?
Okay.
Okay,
that,
yeah.
Or dip it in like an urn of hot water.
No. An urn would not. We'll discuss different methods of koshering at different times.
Why don't you need to do tzliya to the heart? Does anybody eat
tzliya to the heart?
Yeah, I've never had merav yushalmi.
I just had a heart like a few weeks ago.
It's heart kosher.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Chicken heart.
Because you would think if you have to do some liver, then kol chomer in the heart is where all the blood gets pumped around.
Okay, it's a fair question. It's a fair question.
It's much more fat in the heart, though. So why would anyone? It's probably.
Okay. In any event, it's a fair question. You should look into it.
Chicken heart.
When it comes to liver, so it has to be broiled until it's fully done. You would then need to take it off, right away, and then it's kosher. You can use it.
Don't the kosher companies do all this for you?
In most cases, they do it for you. I'm explaining the process so that you'll know what goes into the process of the meat that you're buying. And once in a while, you know, it could happen that a person will buy something which is not koshered, and then you'll have to make sure that you really know what to do in order to kosher it. For the liver, it's going to need to be broiled in this way, in this manner. And for other types of meat, it can be salted.
Is there a difference between the way Mahadran koshers their meat
It could be. It's not a uniform difference between different kashrus organizations which call themselves Mahadran or don't call themselves Mahadran. Typically, in theory, if you're talking about a Mahadran Ashkacha, so then they will do it a little bit slower. They'll salt it on all sides Typically, hopefully, it should be done, the process is done slower and more meticulously, okay? But that's not a standardized thing that I can quantify for you. Okay? Even non-Mahadran kosher meats are gonna have melicha. Otherwise, not kosher at all.
They're going to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's hard for me to quantify, you know. It's hard for me to quantify for you. The Mahadran Ashkachas claim that they do a better job. Okay, I don't know. If you really want to understand what that means, you have to take a tour around each each site and see exactly what they're doing and how they're doing it. Okay? One of the, we'll talk about other differences, but one of the differences between Mahajan and non-Mahajan, but again, this is not a it's not a standardized thing in the industry, so you'd have to go to each place and figure out what it is, will be, for example, the pace of the Shechita. How often they're going to check their knife. So this is industrialized. They're shechting. These guys are shechting. You know, it depends on the place. You know, 50 to 100 chickens an hour. Okay, that could be one chicken every like 40 seconds. So 1 second. So it's going to be a little bit of a slower line. You know, for some places, for some cautious agents, are going to insist on a slower line. They're going to insist the shochet checks his knife more often. Otherwise, you know, if he's doing boom, 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 is it kosher? Is that like honestly? Yeah, it's acceptable. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's not kosher. And there's an absolute right to assume that it is kosher. But is there a little bit of a higher chance of something going wrong if he's working that much faster for that amount of time? Yes. He's going to have to check the knife after he's done 100 chickens, and if he finds a nick in the knife, he got to make sure he gets all 100 chickens off the line and put it onto the treif side. So that's one of the things that we'll discuss, other differences between different. Again, if you want to know the specifics of what each kosher organization allows and each plant does, what's their rate, what's this, so then you have to do real research on each specific, you know, agency and plant. Yeah.
It's a little off topic, but are there any guidelines to how you should treat the animal before
shechting? Well, there is a general halacha called Tsar Bali Chaim. Tsar Bali Chaim is an iser. You're not allowed to cause undue pain to animals. So that being the case, of course, they should be treated as nice and just, you know, as a way as possible. Obviously, I'm sure you can guess that different plants, different slaughterhouses have different standards in this regard. And some are a little bit more careful, some are a little bit less careful. It doesn't affect the kashrus of the meat in terms of hilchus kashrus, but you know, also is it necessary to be careful, to be concerned about tzad barachai? Of course it is.
Yeah,
so you know, again, there are different methods. Some places they take the animal, they tie a chain to one of its legs, and then they basically hoist it upside down. So this is not in order to do the shechita, so that the neck is exposed. So this is not such a pleasant experience. So that's one method. There are other methods for getting the animal to the rabbi. Each one, again, if you want to know what the... Maybe at some point there should be an organization that gives out Tsar Bali Chaim marks, you know, for how they treat the animals. Or another thing, listen, another thing for animals, and especially for chickens and turkey, is the issue of force feeding. Okay, they force feed them... So that they get nice and fat over a very short amount of time, and it unquestionably can and often usually does involve Tsar Bali Chaim, and that's a factor. They have they have monetary incentives to Tsar Bali Chaim,
is
b'zmaninu.
What about, like, I know that they, right after, like, a cow gives birth, they just, like, take away the calf?
Okay, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, you just, like, they have videos of, like, the mother cow just, like, crying, right?
I'm very sure. These are not the type of thing which there is an industry standard. Again, each place, I'm sure, has its own process. You know, it's one thing to see a little video again on YouTube of something happening which is not nice to animals, and then to make that generalization. So again, it'll depend on each place. I'm sure some places have a higher standard of, you know, of care for animals in Tsar Bali Chaim, and I'm sure there are some places which are just, you know, it's all business, and it's just a question of what makes you the most money, and who cares about the animals. So that's perhaps an area that could use a little more, you know, so, a little more checking up on. Yeah.
Who made a chicken trade to sell to a non-kosher store to make
it? Yeah, for sure. That's what they do. Bismanenu. Bismanenu. There are in all the big kosher meat places. There's a kosher line and a non-kosher line. X percentage of the shechitas or X percentage of the animals, as we'll discuss shortly, are not going to be kosher. Okay, so what they simply do is they take it and put it on the non-kosher line.
Are they allowed okay. to sell it?
Yeah,
of course. All these are not Jewish corporations.
Okay, there's no Isser on no. So even if it is a Jewish company, you're allowed to get on no from a nevela or from a trade front. Okay, but anyway, these places have the business arrangements or whatever they are. Okay,
also,
they take it and they throw it on. Yeah.
As long as that, like, if they come up with some sort of computerized machinery that was like very accurate and could do shkita halakhically, allowed. Do you need to have a human doing it?
Yeah,
it's
done by a human.
It has to be a human? Why?
That's what it is.
Does it?
Okay.
It has to be a human.
I believe so.
You can't have like a machine that like switches lives every shkita and like...
How's the machine change?
I believe not.
It's not really about
it
the animal.
It goes through a process.
What's that?
It's not really about the animal. Then.
What's not about the animal?
I mean, if you were able to create a machine that would do it the most precise way, the least painful way, then why wouldn't it be...
You know what? You know what?
You could make it have.
I'll make the following ha'ara.
It's not about the sympathy, it's about how the animal feels. It's not about the one.
So what if. What
I'll make the following ha'ara. Okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the creator. I can't have it. I cannot have it. It's too much on today. Today, in specific, too much on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the creator of people, who is the creator of animals, and the ultimate Baal HaRachamim. It's the one who commanded us in Hilchos Shechita. So every now and then, people come along and say, oh, maybe we should do it this way, we should do it that way, maybe it'll be better than Shechita in terms of sympathy for the animals. You can't be more of a tzaddik than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said Shechita is the way to do it. There's no such thing as being more of a tzaddik. I'll point out that some of the people who are such tzaddikim to the animals are not such tzaddikim to people. The Nazis also outlawed shechita because it wasn't humane enough to the animals. Then they made a shechita of the people. So it doesn't always work hand in hand that people have the best midos are the ones who are in it. Okay, but there are some people who are very certainly well intentioned who are concerned about the pain to the animals. The answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who created animals, who created pain, and whatever guess we can give about what is more comfortable, less comfortable, or more painful, less painful, at the end of the day, if Hashem said to do shechita, that means that it's the best way. Yeah.
What's the status of the... Because last I heard in 2010, New Zealand was the latest country to ban it.
I don't follow these things so closely. Okay, there are some European countries, I think, where they have banned shechita.
It's in one of those remaining Nazi-era laws that has never been repealed.
From New Zealand?
No, it's not. But New Zealand was like recently made it illegal.
No, I think Switzerland. No.
Even nowadays, there's discussions in various European parliaments.
Germany, one of them is can you breed meal, and one of them is Sophia.
One German state?
Okay.
In San Francisco, they're trying to ban.
All right, let's, while we're on the topic of blood, one more issue relating to blood, and that is blood spots in eggs. So you know that when you're using eggs, so you check it for blood spots. What's the issue here? So it goes like this: when an egg is fertilized, so we know that. I mean, obviously we're talking about an egg from a kosher bird; otherwise, the egg would be treif to begin with. But let's say a chicken egg. Okay, it's from a kosher bird, so the egg is kosher. But if it's fertilized, so then it is not kosher. Okay, a chick before it hatches, from the time of fertilization, is considered a sheretz. Once it hatches, now it's a kosher bird. It's not a sheretz anymore. It's a bird. Okay? So the entire egg is a sheretz, and it's aser. Now, in theory, you could have a blood spot in an egg for one of two reasons. Either because it was fertilized, or because, even though it wasn't fertilized, there's a little bit of a blood spot, whatever. Or a spot that looks, like a darker color. It looks like a blood spot. So in theory, if it's a fertilized egg, then the whole egg is in fact treif. If it's just a coloration in the egg, but it's not fertilized, then the part that looks like blood is aser mishum marasayin, and the rest of the egg really is kosher. So bismanenu, the eggs predominantly come from hens that have no contact with roosters. So it's really not possible that the egg would be fertilized, and there's room to assume that's not really fertilized. So there's room to assume that you just throw out the blood spot, and you can eat the rest of the egg. Nonetheless, some say it's actually quite interesting, to see the socio socioeconomic context of different tshuvas, different poskim. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva, listen, yeah, you could assume that that's just the, you know, the rest of the egg is really kosher. But eggs, what's the big deal? It's so cheap. You might as well just throw out the whole egg. And Rav Avadya Yosef says, listen, api din, make a din, you can assume that the whole egg is not treif, and eggs are, you know, they cost. Eggs are expensive. So we can rely on that. Just take out the blood spot. Just take out the blood spot. So it's la locha. Okay, if it's not a financial burden, which Baruch Hashem, I think for most of the people here, probably would not be such a financial burden to throw out the whole egg. Okay, throw out the whole egg. If you already mixed it into something and it's impossible to get out all the different things, so you can assume that it was not fertilized and just get the blood spot. And,
you know, the rest of it is okay. Size, you don't even have to check.
What's that?
If you're making a certain size portion of whatever you're making with eggs, do you even have to
check? Is it possible to check? It is advisable to check. You know, yeah.
What about, let's say, if you're cooking, let's say, hard-boiled eggs, and then you realize that one has, like, a blood spot or something. Does that make all the eggs cook in that? Like, how does that work?
So that's what I would say, right? No, we don't. You definitely don't need to assume. You don't need to assume that the pot is treif. Okay, you should be checking it before you put it in. That would be the that'd be the advice. You're saying a hard boil.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think you can see it.
No, you don't have to assume anything else is treif.
No, after your hands close, you see a red spot.
But still, make your idea. It's not, since they're pasteurized eggs, anyways.
You don't have to assume that everything else is treif. Okay, you don't have to. Okay, we'll pause here, and we'll pick it up next time. Have a great